Hello, my name is Marina L. McClure, and I am here to help you engage biblical literacy and critical thinking so that you can learn to read the Bible better for yourself. Today, we're going to do that by exploring a really interesting topic, growing in our understanding of genealogy in the Bible. So we're going to be discussing what to make of all the genealogy in the Bible, including, you know, how to identify it, what it is, what it's not, and the ways in which genealogy in the Bible is both purposeful in its inclusion and meaningful for the ways that we study. At the end, I'll give you some practical techniques and tools and concepts to make sure that you are able to approach passages of genealogy, whether they're long or short, and know that you are able to look for and identify significance in what is included there in front of you. So let's jump in. First of all, what do I mean by genealogy in the Bible? There are many, many, many examples, especially in the Old Testament. Easy ones that a lot of people are more familiar with, Genesis 5, which is the proliferation after Adam and Eve. Genesis 10, like I said, there's tons of them in the Old Testament. Matthew 1 is the genealogy of Jesus, as is Luke 3. Some of those very, very familiar. Basically, anywhere that you're finding lists of so-and-so was the father of so-and-so, who was the father of so-and-so, or begat, depending on which translations you're using. So-and-so begat so-and-so, begat so-and-so, etc., etc. There's a lot of main types. And that's what you're looking for. When you're starting to see that in the Bible, hey, think, whoa, genealogy, catch your attention and focus in on kind of a different way of thinking about it and approaching it. There are two primary types of genealogy in the Bible. The first is linear. This is what you and I would probably expect to find. You know, my grandfather was the father of my father, who was my father, and then my children right after me. This is following along one line of descendancy for each person named. Also prevalent is what's called a segmented genealogy, and this contains more than one line of descendants. You'll be able to find those, and you'll be able to pretty easily tell which ones are which as you study. A few things to understand. Genealogy in the Bible, one thing we need to know is what it is not. Most importantly here, and this is the key takeaway from this whole video, this whole conversation and teaching, is that modern day, that biblical genealogy is not like modern day genealogy. They are actually quite, quite different. It's really very unlike what we talk about when we talk about modern day genealogy. The concept is different, the tools and ways of doing it, kind of the practices are different, and the intent is different. We'll talk about that as we go. So practical differences. First, telescoping is removing names from the genealogy lists. This is super common in the Bible. So you can compare different genealogies of the same person in the Bible and see that sometimes different names are omitted. Sometimes several names at a time are omitted. This for us, if we approach it thinking this should look like what I found on ancestry.com or what my, you know, great uncle sent to me, like these things really have some key differences that can be disorienting. So again, we have to kind of set aside our modern assumptions about what a family listing or genealogy or ancestry looks like and reframe. So that's what we're doing in this conversation. So that telescoping, removing of names, very, very common. There was a high value placed on symmetry and on number in various sections of genealogy. And so you'll see that as you read where there are places in Matthew 1 where the author says there are 14 here, 14 here, 14 generations here. And then other places where you'll see the numbers get rounded out really smoothly and nicely to 70 or 7 or all these other numbers that have significance in the culture of the time of those people who were recording these things. It's important to understand too that at most of the time periods at which genealogy would have been written in the Old Testament particularly, there were lots of different ways to enter into a family or a family line, clan, a tribe, a nation. So some of those, of course, are birth or adoption or marriage, but also were capture. So if you got captured, you could suddenly become part of that genealogy, which of course is not how we would conceive of that happening today. Also, sometimes one clan was just sort of, or family line, excuse me, was just sort of swapped out for another one. They were just substituted because of the extinction of one clan, either because of death or whatever the case may be, that you could just kind of sub in somebody else to take over that line. And that happened also with whole clans and small family, individual family lines. So that's obviously quite different than how we would do that today. So when you read so-and-so is the son of, or the father of, or begat so-and-so, please remember that those meanings can be greatly expanded beyond what we mean. Father of could basically mean any ancestor before. And like we talked about, that also cannot even mean like a true family or genetic or biological heritage, not even adoption. That can mean so-and-so captured that person and they now became part of this line. It's important to keep in mind also that lists of names are one of the first things to suffer in transmission over many, many, many centuries. And so there is potentially some fluidity in what we see in some of those ancient Old Testament transmissions of genealogical listings. Again, that shouldn't have any bearing whatsoever on whether or not we consider them to be reliable or trustworthy. We just need to understand that our expectations about, quote, accuracy and the way that the ancient cultures reflected throughout the Old Testament particularly, but also the New Testament, had very, very different assumptions and expectations than what we today look for in things like genealogy, where we very much so have a very science-informed expectation about precision. It just wasn't a thing at the time. And so we have to keep that in mind, that we're not putting our cultural context onto this other thing that exists in a very different way. Some names can also be repeated in specific genealogies. This might seem a little suspicious, but of course, just like today, it was normal for fathers or grandfathers, etc., to be named after somebody else. And also, this was very common in priestly families or families that had significance in other ways. So when you see that, that can be a very simple explanation, which is very much so like what we do today. One rare thing in that. Rearrangement of genealogies was also common and possible. There was a lot of emphasis, like we talked about, on symmetry. And so a regular number of generations was attained. Sometimes they would leave people out. Sometimes they would just sort of rearrange the generations, whatever needed to happen, because for them, the important thing they were trying to convey was not about the precision of family line, or I don't even, about lineage, or they're not trying to draw a family tree, right? They're trying to convey something very different. So they're looking for these specific numbers. This is important for us to understand. There are at least 32 passages of genealogy in the Bible. Like I said, most of them are in the Old Testament. The New Testament genealogies are really just focused on Jesus in Matthew and in Luke. But that's significant as well. So what we need to do when we approach genealogy in the Bible, beyond recognizing it and kind of neutralizing our own cultural expectation, is we need to start zooming out and thinking about what genealogies are. So we've talked about how they're not like modern day genealogy, but what they are is purposeful. So let's think about, this is a great example, just for a second. The only genealogies in the New Testament are the genealogies of Jesus. Well, what does that say to us? That says Jesus has supreme and utmost importance in the New Testament. Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That communicates something else to us. The only family lines that matter at this point, the only clans, the only nations as they understood them under the Old Testament that mattered are Jesus, and everything else is suddenly not on the radar anymore. That communicates something hugely significant to us, right? So remember that these genealogies are included with intent, with purpose, and not only in how they're recorded, but in the approach of the way that they're recorded, where they are put in the writing that you're reading. They might be doing things like demonstrating continuity. This is especially common in priestly and royal lines. This relevant to Jesus and legitimizing leadership. They might be showing transition of power from one generation to another. They could be used to keep record for who's eligible for military service, just demonstrating the relationships between Israel and the surrounding people groups. Others were establishing and preserving purity of That's a hard word, homogeny, within the Israel community, the Jewish community. This is especially, think Old Testament. And in the early Old Testament, the land of Israel was promised, right, to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So keeping track of who those people were was actually very important for a practical, useful reason at the time. Tracking heads of populations, heads of families, what the population numbers were, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of those. They can also have literary purpose. So one great example is Genesis 4 and 5, both include some genealogy, and they are there to help the reader or the person, you know, receiving that information, us, you and me, get from Adam to Noah, because we know there's kind of this unknown time period in there, exactly how that happened. And we go pretty quickly, right, from one family, Adam's, to Noah's. And so there's this genealogy there that gets us, but what it also does in the way it's written, if you go look at it, it's really fun, shows us the proliferating effects of sin on the world. So we take Cain's line, you can contrast that in your own reading with Abel's line, and look at the difference and what that communicates to us about how sin works, about what was happening in the world at the time, and about the effects of that as it spreads out across a population. So there's kind of literary and just sort of conceptual significance to that genealogy as well. So when we do that, a couple different ways we can look at it. I said to zoom out. That's so important. One way to do it, though, that is kind of zoomed in is to try to keep a family tree. You can keep, I've done this myself, be ready for it to be messy. It's not going to look like what you might like it to look like if you're like me. It's kind of more of a note system, even if it's a little crazy. And you can find that, you can find one online and just carry along with that. Keep it loose, let the details be kind of flexible, but it will help you get a concept of who's connected to whom, which really is so important when we're looking at the story, especially of Israel and early Israel. You can look at those cross-references. I've done a video about cross-references in the Bible. It's a great way to kind of look at all these family connections that are abundant throughout the Bible. And then remembering that the value of genealogy in the Bible isn't primarily about getting it right. It's about being able to convey something. So that's where we really zoom out. And we look at, okay, what is the purpose and the intention here in this passage, in this place, in this passage? What is it that I'm looking at? What's being communicated? What's being conveyed? Why does it matter right now in this section, in this book, from this author, on this topic, et cetera, et cetera? And so when we do that, it can really change how we receive what we're reading. It is very easy to zone out on a passage of begats, right? Or so-and-so's, you know, was the father of so-and-so, et cetera, et cetera. I've done it many times myself. But when we pause and we zoom out and we say, okay, this is not a list. This is a communication of something important, and it's being included here intentionally. We can start looking at and getting curious about what, why is it here? What's it saying to me? And then we start to learn interesting things. We start to observe different things, and we start to have new questions, which is really where the fun is. And when we consider all these things in a passage of genealogy, we start to see the Bible itself differently, especially genealogy. Some of that webbing that happens in the way genealogy communicates things to us in the Bible is actually really reflective of the overall story of the Bible. And so that can be a really cool way to dig in deeper and learn more for yourself and just find somewhere to start and get excited about a curious piece of information or a question or a person or a family line and begin this journey of discovery for your own study alone. Whether you're watching this on YouTube, viewing it through my website, listening to the podcast, whatever the case may be, make sure that you are subscribed so that you do not miss free teachings that I have coming. There will be more significant messages about themes like this one, important to Matthew, but also I'll be doing a teaching in a few weeks about the genealogy of Jesus. And this information today will tee you up really well to take that in a whole new way. So make sure you're subscribed. Don't miss it. Thank you so much for being with me today. I hope you have a great day.